From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tomorrow marks the one-year anniversary of gay marriage in Massachusetts, that is, of the sole fully legal foothold of gay marriage in the United States. It's been a year of exuberant celebration and of powerful backlash. Tonight, we'll talk with three gay couples about their experience of the first year of gay marriage in the nation's history, and we'll hear the potent voice of pushback that has been raised around the country. Resistance is strong, and yet there is widespread acceptance, too. Tonight on Point, the first anniversary of fully legal gay marriage in America. We begin tonight with a look at how gay marriage is playing out within the gay community, at who's getting married, who's not, and why, at new wedding trends and old dynamics emerging in gay marriage. Genia Belafonte is a reporter for the New York Times. She's looked at styles and patterns of gay marriage in its first year. Genia, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
So you looked at who's getting married, who's not, who's getting married most, and one thing you found was that gay women are getting married in substantially greater numbers than gay men.
Exactly. About 5,400 people, 5,400 couples, rather, have been married in the state of Massachusetts.
I think it may be nearly 6,000 or over at this point, but yes.
About two-thirds of the couples have been female. And this may seem, you know, on the surface, sort of obvious. Well, it plays to the cliche that women want commitment and marriage more than men. But there are lots of interesting reasons for why women are getting married.
What did you see? What have you heard on that front? Why?
Well, one reason is that gay female couples are more likely to have children than male couples.
Hmm.
About one in three female couples in the country have children. And
whether biological or adopted,
dialogue from former marriages,
mm-hmm.
From sperm donors,
mm-hmm.
or adopted or whatever,
right.
About one in five gay male couples, and that figure holds true nationally and for the state of Massachusetts.
So that's a strong incentive. Kids, what else?
That is a very strong incentive. Another strong incentive is a financial one. It's very pragmatic for women to marry. Women, of course, make less money on average than men. And interestingly, an economist who studied gay and lesbian income patterns had discovered that in Massachusetts, gay women make on the average of 20% less per year in income. So there's an incentive
to pool resources,
exactly.
Hmm.
And another interesting thing I found is that there's just a very, often the traditional impulse that compels women toward very traditional, not only marriage, but very traditional iterations of marriage and weddings.
You see that image from childhood of the wedding dress and all the...
cakes and flower girls and bridesmaids, and I found two couples actually, both of whom, all four of the women had gone to Wellesley. They were in their very early 20s. They had not had significant long-term relationships before, and they were having very elaborate weddings. Their fathers were walking them down the aisle. One couple was having six bridesmaids in pink gowns.
The whole enchilada, the full pageantry.
Yeah, 100 to 200 guests. At each event.
How have you found people handling the kind of protocol and symbols of marriage in gay marriage, Genia?
I have people who are opting for a wedding are following patterns and rituals very very similar to heterosexual couples. They're registering for gifts. They plan a ceremony, perhaps in a church, or are married by a judge or some other sort of officiant. A lot of people actually have waited in Massachusetts to marry because they want their families to be present, and they want, relatives in their immediate family and extended to really get a chance to grasp the idea that this is a very traditional thing that the couples are embarking on. So there are often lots of, big families present, often lots of children. Many of the couples who've gotten older, who've gotten married specifically in the beginning a year ago were much, were older, predominantly in their 40s and 50s. So there are lots of children in these scenarios.
You wrote about how for a long time, you're quoting one observer here, the gay rights movement was about the right to be different. With the advent of legal marriage, it's become, in some dimensions, about the right to be the same.
Exactly. And that, that is what we're seeing playing out in the very sort of traditional weddings that are happening.
Even to the point of relatives, once marriage was legal in Massachusetts, looking at their gay son or gay daughter who's had a companion for some time and raising that eyebrow and saying, well, what about it? Aren't you getting married?
Exactly. That seems to be a trend in much younger couples. Couples in their 20s, you know, whose parents obviously grew up, you know, in the era of Stonewall, where young people in the era of Stonewall, maybe are in their 50s or early 60s now, grew up in an era of gay rights, and if this is available to their sons and daughters, they question, you know, well, why aren't you getting married? And there is a lot of young people are finding that they're being subjected to the same kinds of familial, parental, and even peer pressures that heterosexual men and women in their 20s and 30s are.
And, Jeannie, a quick last question. You know, there's been a lot of pushback across the country, many more states now banning gay marriage in their constitutions. When you talk to people who have been married in this last year, do they feel liberated, embattled? Are they powerfully aware of that pushback?
Many people feel, you know, very triumphant. Some people did get married really to make a political statement. Others did not. Others who waited longer waited because they wanted to show their friends and family that this was a statement about their intimacy, not political.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, people in Massachusetts are living really, are insulated from a lot of what is going on in the rest of the country. There are 14 states, you know, who've banned, put amendments in the Constitution banning gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of I have not found many couples in Massachusetts really fighting a kind of prejudice about this.
Jeannie, thanks for your reporting and thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Jeannie Belafonte, features reporter for The New York Times. She spoke with me from New York. A year ago tonight, excitement was running sky high in Massachusetts among gay citizens who had fought for and won the right to marry in the state's high court, among opponents of gay marriage who described it as a kind of moral catastrophe. At midnight, jubilant gay couples were lined up for marriage licenses. On May 17th, they got them. Some were wed. We'll hear from three of those couples tonight and then from the voice of resistance to gay marriage. You can join the conversation. 1 year on, how do you feel about gay marriage and the opposition to gay marriage? Has 1 year of legal gay marriage in one state made you and your community more accepting or more determined to push back? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight in the studio are John Minier and Jim Flanagan. They picked up their marriage license a year ago tomorrow, May 17th last year, and were married on May 20th. They've been together for 10 years and live with their two adopted children in the Boston area. John and Jim, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Also with me in the studio tonight are Susan Shepherd and Marcia Hams. They were the first gay couple in Massachusetts to receive a marriage license. They got theirs in Cambridge just after midnight last May 17th. They've been together since 1976 and raised a son together who is now 25. Susan and Marcia, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Anybody in Massachusetts, or for that matter, watching on media around the world, can't forget that night a year ago and the excitement at the doors of City Hall. Susan, Marcia, you were there. Describe to us what it was like.
Well, it was so one of the most amazing, exciting experiences of my life. We had been there for almost 24 hours, and so we saw
camped
things.
Camped out, sleeping bags, the whole bit, as I recall.
That's right. And so we had seen, you know, no one was there at 5 in the morning, and then gradually by the evening there were 10,000 people there and reporters from everywhere, and it was really just amazing.
And now here we are a year later. Susan, you weren't kids when you got married. You'd been together for a long time already. Has it made a difference being legally married?
Good question. Absolutely. I think absolutely. It's made a difference in the way that people look at us and the casual way we can talk to acquaintances in our lives, not just the friends, but mm-hmm. the next layer of people, the people you work with, who just think it's really cool. I have to say, that's the impression I get, wow, that's really cool. And it's really made a huge difference to our son, which was sort of surprising since, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, being a family.
Right.
And
he's felt what as a result of your being legally wed?
He feels as though we have gotten the recognition that we should have.
So
a kind of
credit due to the two women who raised him.
And he's just been able to be so much. He's open now with friends that he couldn't really talk about this with, or he didn't know if he could. And they've responded so wonderfully that it's made him just feel so liberated and put him in touch with who he is on a different level. Because, you know, he was born 25 years ago, and so we were very protective of him, and we didn't want to be too open when we didn't think that when we thought we would get hostility
and he could be hurt.
And he could be hurt. And so we were always walking that line, and now he just feels a huge weight lifted, and so do we.
John, Jim, 1 year.
I wanted to add something to what Susan and Marcia said. They were talking about the recognition that they felt that they had earned and deserved, but I also think that their son was able to experience the recognition that he deserves, too, because every child deserves to have two parents who are married and who love them and support them. And I think that your family is an example that I think many families would like to hold up as something, I know we certainly would, as something that we would like to aspire to.
And yet, Jim, you know what the national response has been. There's a lot of acceptance out there, but there are a lot more states on the map now that are actively legally resisting this. Are you surprised by that? Did you think a year ago, here we go, it's going to become the, you know, sort of the law of the land?
No, I don't think I felt like, I think we're in a special state in Massachusetts. I think we're fortunate to be here. I feel like for us, I think when the state of Massachusetts Supreme Court decision came through, the language, I think, made me and John too, and I guess a lot of other gay people that were wanting to get married and get our civil rights, feel as if this was a true milestone, and actually the language of that court ruling affected how I feel about myself, and which was an amazing thing to think that language can actually have that effect on you. And if it can have that effect on me, a gay person, I wonder what it can have on other people out there that are not gay.
A ruling buoying you up personally. We're talking tonight about the first anniversary of fully legal gay marriage in America. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the first anniversary of fully legal gay marriage in America, about gay weddings, gay married life, and the powerful national pushback on gay marriage. You can join the conversation tonight, 1 year on. How do you feel about gay marriage and the opposition to gay marriage? And what's your question for gay couples about to celebrate their 1 year anniversary? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Susan Shepherd and Marcia Hams. They got their marriage license a year ago tomorrow and were married on May 23rd, 2004. And by John Minier and Jim Flanagan. They got their marriage license a year ago tomorrow and were married on May 20th. So anniversaries are popping all over the place here. John, Susan and Marcia mentioned how it's changed the way they talk about their relationship, about the way it's presented publicly. And I wonder how that's been in your case with you and Jim.
I've experienced that also, particularly, I think, in work and career-related conversations. And I think also that was true, I think, for us when we adopted our sons. It's important, I think, for us to talk about our marriage, talk about our family. The most clear insignia, I guess, of a committed couple in a marriage is a wedding ring. People don't miss those kinds of cues in social settings. So the topic comes up, and we feel it's very important to speak openly and candidly and to share our experiences with other people.
Let me ask you just at a very, you know, mundane daily level. I see your wedding ring. When people see it, what do they assume?
They
ask about the wife
to a woman.
I don't know. I think they probably do. And you know, as I stroll through an airport, assume that that my spouse is a woman. But there's no doubt. I think in those people who know us in social settings, most of our friends, basically friends we've met through our kids, are heterosexual couples. They're very, very supportive of what we've done as a family. And I think really, and this goes to the heart of the matter, the more people who meet us and know us, us, Susan and Marcia and others, I think that the resistance just disappears. We're like anybody else. We weren't born on the moon. We have real families. We have great parents. My values are my family's values, and I think that's important to be out there and to talk with people about our marriage and about our family.
More silly, simple questions. You call each other
partner, that would have been sort of the pre-marriage word. Husband, wife.
I use partner still.
Still partner, I think.
Although it is, for me, the main confusion.
Towards husband, I think.
A little bit. I have a business partner, too, who's a woman, so I can really
get people. Use that word all over. Susan Marsha, how about you?
I actually have been trying to use wife. It's still hard because
a little
partner,
cognitive dissonance in the listener sometimes.
Partner doesn't.
Well, I think we're trying to liberate the word.
That's right. His wife has a lot of baggage, you know, and in fact, a woman in my office who's heterosexual came up to me after all this and she said, thank you, you've liberated marriage for straight women.
Meaning
that she felt like she could embrace marriage and being a wife in a different way because it didn't have this baggage of being subservient. And so now it has a whole different connotation in terms of equality. So I thought that was really interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Now, I've got to ask you about this map. It was, you could see it anywhere. It happened to be on the front page of the, or inside the Boston Globe this weekend that shows, you know, states that opposed gay marriage or had laws and constitutional amendments against it a year ago and those that have it now. And there are many, many more that have it now. And many more in the process of developing deep, heavy restrictions on gay marriage. So my question is this, in a practical level, however, and we can hear, you know, your celebration of it here tonight, your satisfaction in it, the deep kind of gratification, but at a political level, what do you think? Did the gay rights movement jump the gun? Did it provoke more pushback than your privilege in marrying gained?
Well, I would just like to point out that there's a very strong and, I think, rich parallel, at least in my opinion, to interracial marriage in the 50s. There were 30-some-odd states in the mid-50s that prohibited by law marriage between persons of different racial backgrounds. And there was only a few states where that was litigated, and by virtue of that litigation and future decisions about states recognizing the rights of other states, did the cards fall. And so I'm hopeful that that will be the eventual outcome of what we're facing now. Granted, state constitutional amendments will make it more difficult. Certainly, a federal amendment would be a major obstacle. But I fundamentally believe in the fairness of the American people, and ultimately that will prevail.
You think in time. Susan, what do you think? In a very strategic sense, you would look at it from a gay rights perspective. Was it a mistake?
Somebody has to be first. I think that's the key point. There always has to be a beginning to this. I don't think anybody has the illusion that we were going to sweep the country and win all of these. But it's actually, I believe, like you just said, that in the basic goodness and the basic fairness of all people and in their heart of hearts, they don't want to deprive people of their civil rights. And I think it's actually a small minority of people who are putting these things on the ballots and trying to whip up a frenzy against us, against a nameless, faceless thing that scares people.
But new national poll here again in the Globe. Overall, do you approve or disapprove of gay and lesbian couples being allowed to get married? 50% disapprove, 37% approve. Marsha, you know, younger...
That's progress, Tom.
Well, it may be
could
progress.
Could you imagine that poll 5 years ago?
I'm sure that's right. On the other hand, constitutional amendments are being passed.
Yes.
And those are very difficult to reverse.
They're very
now,
serious.
Younger people in these polls are more open to gay marriage. Mm-hmm. So the question I would put to you, Marsha, is, again, from the perspective of gay rights, might you have been better off waiting for this to sort of, ripen and drop naturally into your laps, if indeed that's what might have been coming?
Well, the reality is actually we had been waiting. There have been people interested in filing court cases for many, many years. And in fact, leaders had dampened that enthusiasm for a number of years.
Wait,
but the
wait,
reality
hold on.
Is... Mm-hmm. And when you have so many people, I mean, we've been together for 28 years. You have many, many people that have been building families and in relationships for many, many years. How long can you actually hold back the feelings that people have about their civil rights?
And but what if it leads to people in many other states across the country not having those rights for decades?
I don't know that we know that it's going to. That it's going to be decades. I think that it's going to be a long struggle. I guess I just agree with Susan that it's it is someone was going to be first. There was going to be a backlash. This, in fact, is a very organized backlash, and I think we just have to redouble our efforts to move ahead.
Susan, Marcia, John, Jim, stand by. I want to welcome to our conversation from Worcester, Massachusetts, Amy and Annette Whitehead Plow. Met in Massachusetts in January of 99, married on May 17th last year. Amy and Annette, are you there?
We sure are.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Will you be celebrating your anniversary tomorrow?
We will.
And how will you celebrate?
We are going to be joining a bunch of other people down at the Fairmont Copley Plaza, along with the folks from GLAAD and the Freedom to Marry Coalition.
Remind us of the state of mind you were in a year ago tomorrow at that wedding. You'd already had a civil union in Vermont, a civil union ceremony, but on that day that you were finally wed, when gay marriage was made legal, what was your frame of mind?
My frame of mind was, it was incredibly moving to be there that day, and we saw the very first wedding in Massachusetts to occur. And then later that day, we were the first couple to be married in Somerville, Massachusetts, in the city hall.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Justice of the Peace said, by the power invested in me by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts,
yes.
It was so moving to finally hear that and to feel that we were finally equal to everyone else that we knew that was heterosexual.
Mm. And Amy, a year on, has marriage lived up to your expectations?
It sure has. The equality piece is really the piece that gets me. We've certainly gained some tangible benefits as well, but for me, it's about holding my head high, knowing that I'm equal. The legality of it lends a certain legitimacy to our relationship that was lacking a year ago.
Has it changed the way that you talk with other people, whether friends or acquaintances or strangers, about your relationship?
Most definitely. We both have embraced the word wife for each other,
mm-hmm.
because we're married, and that's a proper term, for a wife. And if we use the term like partner or spouse, that's really it doesn't delineate what our actual relationship is. And so we use that with everyone, with our friends and family, as well as like just the people that you meet, like the plumber or whoever.
And in Massachusetts and nationally, there's been a lot of pushback. There's a strong effort here to get a constitutional amendment eventually that would ban gay marriage, even in Massachusetts. Have you run into resistance or people who, present anger or something like that when they understand that you are married and you are married and then that you are gay?
Most definitely we do. We've run into it both, like in just on our basic rights, and as well as personally.
How does it come up?
With our rights in my company, we're only allowed to choose one of three health care plans,
mm-hmm.
because it is, and also, I'm not allowed to put Amy on my dental or vision plans because of the difference between state and federal laws.
But if you had people curl their lip and kind of give you, a dirty look when they learned that you're married.
Definitely. Most of my family, except for my younger brother, does not talk to me and hasn't talked to me since Amy and I became engaged before our holy union,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
in 2001. And so I've experienced that on a very, very personal level.
So it doesn't exactly make a whole new world, but it's certainly, we can hear it. It's made a big difference. Amy and Annette Whitehead Plow in Worcester, Massachusetts, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having us.
I want to turn to a couple of callers here. Terry's calling from Northborough, Massachusetts. Hi, Terry, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
I think everybody's pretty well here. Thanks, Terry.
Let me preface this by saying I'm 62 years old, and I'm gay. And I'm very proud of Massachusetts. I'm very proud of the couples that are speaking with us. I want to congratulate them all. I think it's really exquisite. It's very beautiful that they're able to do this.
We feel the emotion. We hear it. I think they hear it right in this room, Terry.
Yeah, and I think it's very extraordinary, Tom, that Massachusetts is so much more progressive than the rest of the country. It's interesting because I've lived in Holland several times. I just came back from 6 months there. In 2001, the issue was raised in Holland. And the discussion consisted largely of people saying, you mean we weren't letting people marry the people they love? Why were we doing that?
And yet, you look at that map of states that are pushing back now with strong prohibitions, with constitutional amendments, and you know that runs very deep in the United States, Terry.
It does. And I think what one of your guests said is very true. It's a very organized resistance, and it comes largely from a very, very deeply felt Christian feeling that the Bible says that, it's wrong. I don't actually happen to think the Bible does say it's wrong, but some people do. And the problem, of course, is that we have a real tendency in the United States to try and make other people do what we want. And what I'm proud about in Massachusetts is that the court basically said our Constitution does not allow us to tell people who to marry.
And out of that flows everything that's happened in the last year. Terry, thanks for your call. John, Jim, there's congratulations to all of you, Susan, Marcia. But also, again, this vivid awareness that this is the only state at the moment. Many others are pushing just the other way. And you've heard the arguments for why. People very concerned in substantial numbers that there is a kind of deleterious effect over time of the example of gay marriage.
Well, there is almost no practical, rational reason that I have heard that holds up under any kind of scrutiny. It's based on fear. It's based on misinformation. It's based on hatred. And I think people of good faith, and there are many, many Christians in this country that I think are well-intended, will recognize that for what it is.
Jim, what do you think?
Well, you just wonder what the people that are voting for these amendments think of the entire country of Canada or Sweden or Belgium
or Spain
or Holland. I mean, there are millions of people that have chosen to say that gay marriage is the next step in securing the civil rights for human beings.
I expect they think, well, they are not the USA, and we're going to be a little different here.
Evidently they do think that we're going to be a little bit differently, but they'll come along.
Marcia, are you so confident they'll come along?
Yes, I am confident that they'll come along. I think, it's taken, it takes a long time often for this kind of change. I think, Brown versus Education was in the 50s, and I think we're still struggling with many of the issues that were raised around equality in education at that time, and here we are in 2005. So I think that it is a long process, and we have a lot of work to do. But I do think that we'll get there. I think that one of the things I've thought was so extraordinary in Massachusetts was the debate around what democracy means in this country. I hadn't really thought about the Constitution at the level that it was debated in our legislature. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to have religious freedom? What does it mean to have the rights of minorities protected by the Constitution? That's fundamental to the whole country.
That debate took it right down to the very core. Susan, what about within the gay community? Have you seen, some lines of division here? I mean, just like in the general population, some people are not going to get married. But is this kind of, within relationships, has this pressed the point? Are people now, questioning their commitment to one another if they're not getting married at this point?
I think that's a younger crowd than I hang around with. But in our crowd, which a lot of women who came out of the women's movement of the 70s mm-hmm. Opposed to marriage, it was very interesting that many of our friends were not going to get married.
Because marriage was the thing of male dominance and patriarchy.
Right, you got it. Mm-hmm. But slowly, people changed their minds for whatever reason. And most of our kids are older, too, so we didn't have that. But and then the second piece was that we were really surprised that as we said the words in that first week where everybody ran out and got married, everybody was crying, and it was this whole other thing that started to, you could feel, as you're making these vows, and it's like, okay, and you think it's a political statement, and then suddenly it becomes very richly personal.
Jim, you know, the joke in The New Yorker was something along the lines of, you know, condolences. You know, I mean, it's the old silly joke about marriage, but, you know, welcome to marriage. Lucky you. Marriage is famously not all roses.
And that's true. And we do know some people that I think it is a point in time that forces people to evaluate their relationship and decide, you know, are we going to go forward or not? It has had that effect on certain people that we know.
But in this room tonight, on the eve of a whole lot of anniversaries, we hear a lot of satisfaction. John Minier and Jim Flanagan, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
And Susan Shepherd and Marcia Hams, wonderful to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I guess I have to say happy anniversary to everybody here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ray. We're talking about gay marriage in America tonight. You can join us 1-800-423-8255. Are you for it or against it? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the first anniversary of fully legal gay marriage in America, about gay weddings, gay married life, and the powerful national pushback to gay marriage. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you think? Does the national backlash in many states indicate that gay rights advocates pushed too far? A year ago, did you think gay marriage was about to sweep the country, or did you feel the pushback coming? And 20 years from now, what do you expect national attitudes, national and state law to be on gay marriage? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be joined in just a moment by Tom Minery, Vice President for Public Policy at Focus on the Family. They've been very strong advocates against gay marriage. But right now, I'm joined in the studio by WBUR reporter Fred Tice, who has followed the issue in the state and across the country. Fred, thanks for being with us tonight.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Fred, give us a quick overview of where things stand. First, nationally, in the realm of the states, there has been a lot of activity in the last year.
Yes, there has. First, let's look at states that are following in the footsteps of Massachusetts. There are seven states now, including California and New York, where there are cases percolating through the courts where people are trying to get same-sex marriage recognized in those states.
Marriage, civil union, both?
Marriage. We're
marriage.
Talking about marriage.
So really
just
like
getting
Massachusetts.
Just trying to repeat what happened here.
And when might we see decisions coming? Any idea?
Obviously, they're staggered. I think sometime in the next few months we could see some decisions. New York, the courts are fairly far along. They're at the Court of Appeals level soon. And then, of course, it would have to go to they're at the intermediary level soon. Then it would go to the Court of Appeals in New York, which is the highest court in the land.
But the
in New
courts
York.
May produce more states where it's legal, leaving Massachusetts not necessarily alone.
And then we have legislatures. In California, we have a measure that's come out of committee that would repeal that state's law limiting marriage to a man and a woman, mm-hmm. and in fact establish gay marriage legislatively. If so, the California would be the first state to have done that. And then, of course, we just recently had Connecticut establish civil unions mm-hmm. legislatively.
And then there was Nebraska. I guess this is not
now with Nebraska. This ties into the pushback efforts. Mm-hmm. Nebraska had a constitutional amendment, a very broadly worded constitutional amendment that seemed vulnerable to challenge, mm-hmm. and it prohibited marriage between people of the same sex.
Yes.
Now, a federal judge under federal constitutional law struck down that amendment. Of course,
have been very striking to Nebraskans who had voted rather overwhelmingly to ban that.
And what will happen now, of course, there will be appeals, but the decision by the judge in Nebraska has really revived the movement for or calls for a federal constitutional amendment, which President Bush had given vocal support to, but really hadn't pushed for because he didn't seem to feel that there was the support in Congress. Now, whether there is support in Congress or not, I guess we'll find out soon enough.
And then all the states that have produced state constitutional amendments barring gay marriage in the last year.
Right.
There are a lot of them.
Yeah, and then there were 16 states that passed measures against either laws or constitutional amendments against gay marriage after it became legal here in Massachusetts. And then Kansas became the 15th state recently. The voters there approved a constitutional amendment. So, a tremendous amount of backlash.
And a huge backlash, lots of activity in many directions. I want to turn now, Fred, if you'd be good enough to stand by, to Colorado Springs. We're joined by Tom Minery. He's Vice President for Public Policy for Focus on the Family. They've been advocating a national constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. Tom Minery, thanks for being with us tonight.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
So you've been working hard against gay marriage, and in your view, how is that project going?
Well, we've been working hard to preserve the age-old definition of marriage in order to protect the institution for the nurturance of children. And it's going very well. The vote for the marriage law, the court decision on marriage in Massachusetts, I think was a bridge too far. I could never have predicted the backlash against that we have seen, with so many states changing their constitutions for this purpose, and another handful undoubtedly ready to do the same between now and the 2006 election. We have that Massachusetts court ruling has energized and, if you will, politicized local churches all across the country, and that is why we have seen all of these constitutional amendments pass with such strong majorities.
Tom, what are you anticipating? If you look at another 5 or 10 years, what do you think that map is likely to look like? And leave aside the national constitutional amendment for the moment. That might or might not happen, but states are clearly active. You just heard Fred Tice describe some of the state activity toward more gay marriage rights. But what are you anticipating a few years down the road?
Well, I really can't ignore the federal solution because it's a federal problem. As Fred correctly pointed out, with the situation we now have in Nebraska, we have for the first time a federal court that has kicked over a constitutional amendment passed by an overwhelming majority of the people in a state. That sets up a very interesting issue, and it's precisely this. Many senators have said marriage is a state issue. It's always been a state issue. The federal government has no reason to get involved. Now we've seen an arm of the federal government, the courts, meddling in the in what the state has done. So there must be a federal solution, and that's why I think the federal marriage amendment will play a strong role in the next few years.
Your organization, your top guy there, James Dobson, are perceived to be quite powerful in the current environment in Washington, great access to the White House. Do you feel adequately supported by Republicans in Congress, by President Bush? Do you think they've pushed hard enough for your satisfaction for the national constitutional amendment?
Well, I don't think anybody could push hard enough for our satisfaction. We recognize that there are a lot of issues on the president's plate, but he has staked strongly his desire to see this amendment pass. We appreciate that and wish he would do more, believe he will do more, as this issue now percolates to the top again, as it will following the Nebraska court ruling.
Tom Minery, let me ask you, I know you heard a few minutes of our previous segment when we had on a number of gay couples. They'll be celebrating one-year anniversaries first soon. You can't help when you listen to them but hear the satisfaction and pride and I guess love in their voices. Now, you're by position and belief opposed, but I wonder when you hear that satisfaction, that pride, that love, how do you process that? How do you think about what they're feeling?
Oh, well, it's a difficult issue, and I'm sure their feelings, as are many same-sex couples who are married, are very genuine, very heartfelt. And I think it's, in one sense, cruel to allow this to proceed for this reason. If it were just about their marriages, if it were just about my marriage, we would not have an issue. But this is about formal policy that the government establishes, normatizing the statement that a child does not need a mother and a dad. And there's an overwhelming mountain of social science research that concludes that, yeah, children need moms and dads. And so when we look at this, we We look at the entire family. We look at the future of children. We see what fatherlessness has caused to so many boys especially, and that drives us back to the ancient wisdom that is now backed up by social science that says children need a mom and a dad.
Of course, two of the three couples we just spoke with are raising children. The two women, Susan and Marcia, have already raised a son to age 25. We'll look at that. Tim Minery, Fred Tice, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Patrick Guerrero. He is president of the Log Cabin Republicans, a group representing gay Republicans. Patrick Guerrero, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good to be with you tonight.
Tom Minery is expressing satisfaction at what he's seen over the last year and even some surprise at how vigorous the pushback has been. What's your assessment of the national political stage when it comes to gay marriage in the last year? Did you think a year ago that there would be a wave of gay marriage rights being promulgated across the country? Are you surprised that there's been such a hard push back?
No, I think it's actually very natural. One of the things that we know is that this is the first time in American history we've had a discussion about how to make sure that loving, tax-paying adults who want to take on the responsibilities of caring for each other for a lifetime instead of the government having to do it, the nation's having that this dialogue for the first time. And what we're finding in states like Massachusetts, that it's experimented with gay marriage for a year, and Vermont, which has experimented with civil unions for a couple of years, that when people discover that their neighbors who fix their home and volunteer at their church and are involved in the Chamber of Commerce just got married or just got a civil union, they slowly over time become accepting and respectful of all families and offer them the same dignity as everybody else. And I think underneath the surface of a little bit of pushback and some state amendments, you're seeing the nation slowly work towards basic fairness for all families. And I actually think the course of history is quite clear here. It's going to take some time, and there will be steps forward followed by some steps backwards. Mm. But I think everyone knows where we're heading here, which is that loving families are going to find respect and tax fairness under the laws, and most fair-minded Americans are getting there.
But Tom Minery might say, for the lessons of history, history is long, and through most of it, it's marriage has been man and woman. His group is very potent right now in the Republican Party. In your party, do you think that the GOP is going to push through a national constitutional amendment against gay marriage, Patrick Guerrero?
I'll quote John McCain on the floor of the United States Senate. A veteran respected by members of both political parties. He said the Federal Marriage Amendment runs antithetical to the foundation and traditions of the Republican Party. Marriage has always been an issue that has been left up to states, and states like Massachusetts will have one policy and experiment and see what works, and now we have over 50% of the citizens in Massachusetts who support gay marriage. There will be other states that don't go there right now and have a right to have a discussion and debate through the courts and the legislatures and ultimately even some ballot boxes. The most remarkable part about the gay marriages in Massachusetts is that it was the biggest non-event. It was historic. It was powerful. But what people woke up the day after those first marriages and realized that their same neighbors went to the same workplace, paid the same amount of taxes, volunteered at the same schools and senior centers, cared for their in-laws and their families, and no heterosexual marriage that I am aware of was threatened by two loving people choosing to have their relationship recognized by a license at City Hall.
There was a lot of that acceptance, but I have to point out there's been a lot of resistance as well as a move, of course, to amend the state constitution. I want to get a caller or two in here. Peter's calling from Boston. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Peter.
Good. Listen, I'm a firm believer of equal rights, and in Massachusetts, now that the law of the land is, I think, the exception to the most of the states of the gay marriage and the sanctity of it. I'm just saying, as a father of two adult children, one with grandkids and my daughter,
yes,
children, I have to admit, I have a problem with, I think, historically, the arguments are historically whether the promotion of gay marriage is something that we want to do, but Massachusetts has done it. Here's my issue now. Now there's such an agenda, just within the last couple of weeks in the Boston area, they're pushing in the elementary schools about the acceptance of gay families and as a social value. And
under the diversity ban.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I see parents that, I mean, Massachusetts is stuck with what it is, and nothing's going to happen to it, but I could see a real dilemma with the, you know, my kids were at that age, and my grandkids. I'm saying, whoa, do I necessarily want that to be taught to my children?
And what are you afraid the consequences of that might be, Peter?
I really believe it's a heavy gay agenda that really wants just to inculcate in these young kids that, you know, that that's a normal accepting social patent because Massachusetts adopted it.
Yeah.
Of course, historically it hasn't, and I think it's a problem. And I think a lot of parents with young children, that's the way I would have felt. I believe my son feels the same way. It's something that it's disturbing, I guess.
Peter, we've got it, and thanks very much for your call. Tom Minery, that must be a shared concern of your organization, Focus on the Family.
Well, it's one we hear a lot. Let me go back to something that Patrick said, and it's a very scary word. The word that Patrick used was experiment. Different states are going to experiment. Let's not forget who we are experimenting on. The experiment is on children. And we have to give children every opportunity to be healthy, successful adults. And
but of course, you know how that word is used. I mean,
not the way to do it.
But you know, the whole American experience is often called an experiment. Tom Minery, an experiment with human rights, with individual rights. But you think it gets more personal than that?
Well, it does. And usually, in the conversations with happy same-sex couples who are married, as in Massachusetts, and who have civil unions in other states, if you listen, you find it's what we want, it's what we've asked for, it's what we want to do. But very seldom do you hear it's what's best for the children, because it's never best for the children to say in law motherlessness or fatherlessness is just fine.
Patrick Guerrero?
I would just comment that there are thousands and thousands of children in the United States and hundreds of thousands across the globe that are looking for parents. The reality is that gay and lesbian Americans, single parents, beautiful, loving heterosexual couples have shown great dignity in adopting children and raising kids for decades. All we're doing through a basic civil license is recognizing those tax-paying relationships and offering those children who are going to be raised by those parents anyways the same type of legal protections of having two parents who can watch over them. So if there was some long waiting list for these children, that would be a very different story. The fact is that most of the folks who are opposed to civil marriage for gay and lesbian Americans have been opposed to nearly all of the type of benefits that we've talked about, civil unions, domestic partnership legislation. The reality is that the country is fair-minded. It's got a history of having very difficult discussions about social policy. And as states begin to experience what it's like to allow couples to get a civil marriage license or a civil union, they're finding that neighborhoods are stronger, families are stronger, children who already are being raised by these beautiful adults are being cared for and have legal protections they didn't have. And no religion or individual has been asked to embrace in any way those families if it was inconsistent with their religious traditions. And I think we need to respect the dignity of all families, including gay and lesbian families.
Fred Tice, there you hear it. Two voices from the Republican Party, but quite different views. And here's the battle.
Absolutely. And I think it's clear that this decision by the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts last year has really set back the cause of gay rights in many states in the United States, or at least gay rights if you define gay rights as being the right to marry.
On the other hand, as you say, we heard here tonight in Massachusetts, people are feeling a certain way. California, New York may go that way. Nebraska, by court order, a lot of hand-to-hand combat across the country coming.
Absolutely.
Fred Tice, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
And Tom Minery at Focus on the Family, joining us tonight from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And Patrick Guerrero, president of the Log Cabin Republicans, a group representing gay Republicans. Mr. Guerrero, thank you for joining us tonight.
Good evening.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.